Welcome to the Art Scene, brought to you each week by UA Little Rock Public Radio. September 24th is when the planning for the 60th anniversary of the Little Rock Central High School crisis, now becoming more known as the Little Rock Nine, celebrities are coming in and bringing their own contributions. Dr. Henry Louis Gates Jr., who is noted for African-American research, is working with a composer creating an opera of the Little Rock Nine. I recently interviewed the composer-conductor, Tania León. Hers is a name to conjure with. From the Cuba where she was born and grew up, in America, in Europe. And as we talked, I lost count of the people and places she has made her own. How much she has achieved, beyond description. So we just talked. My first question was her reaction when she was asked to join this Little Rock Nine project. When you were approached to do this, I was interested to know what your reaction was.
Well, to tell you the truth, I didn't know that much about this incident until I was approached by Central University of Arkansas, meaning that I knew the most talked about symbols or incidents of the civil rights movement. And that is a period where I was not in this country. And frankly, I didn't go into that line of incidents to find more about situations such as this. So when the university approached me about the project, I told them, you know, that I wanted to research the project and find out more about what the whole situation was. And once I read the history of the incident, and I even went to YouTube and saw clips, and I researched more, and I saw books, and you know, I was really very moved. You know, I come from a very poor family in an island of the Caribbean, and I can identify with the hopes and dreams of the so-called minority people of the world, which is something I don't believe in, because, you know, I don't know, for a certain reason, seems very early in my life, I saw everybody as equal. And I have been always puzzled about the fact that systems are created in society for one group to always be fighting with another group for one reason or the other. You know, racism is one system, you know, and, you know, that goes online for many, many things. I mean, it could be culture, it could be that people are have more weight than others. I mean, you know, there's always something. It's very, very hard to take when it's instituted.
Yes. But let's stop for a minute at this point in the discussion about the project, because I would like to take you back to where you began. You mentioned that you were with a poorer family. But how did you manage, with that background, they must have all been very supportive of you and realized that you had something that they hadn't expected in one of their children?
Well, you know, the composite of my family was multicultural and multiracial. Mm-hmm. And but the most common thing among everybody is, I mean, they were humans, of course, but that they were poor.
Yes.
And that is that was my neighborhood. My neighborhood looked like, I don't know, the United Nations, but everybody was poor. It's the kind of neighborhood that I know it exists all over the world, where if you cooked a certain dessert, you just knock at your neighbor and give it a little bit of that dessert. Or if you do coffee, you know, a cafe, I mean, everybody gets a little bit of coffee, you know, everybody that is around. So, in other words, I mean, It's a community that used to sort of like support each other because everybody was on the same boat.
Yes. What you're saying is this is the aspect of the growing up that you had, but you must have had such richness in these sharings and discussions and growing up and finding people talking with you and listening to adults and wondering what the world was going to happen for you.
Exactly, exactly. Well, you have to understand that when I was born, I mean, the world was in turmoil because, I mean, it was actually closer to the ending of World War II, to the point that people in my neighborhood, including my grandmother, enlisted themselves to go to the war as nurses and as whatever they could do. I mean, and this was in Cuba. This was not even here. But, I mean, it was global. It was a global effort. And there was something that called the Allies. They were actually recruiting people from all over the world in order to combat what was going on in Europe, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So, therefore, I mean, that's when I was born.
What were you looking at to go into with these as examples? Where did the music come?
Well, nobody knows. Because, I mean, after I was born and got into music, you know, now we are a family of musicians. I was the first person in my family to become a musician.
Mm-hmm.
And my grandmother is the one that noticed, my grandmother on the father's side, she noticed that I was really enamored with music. And that I would dance to the rhythm of the music, and that I would sing exactly how the music sounded, and that I would sometimes, you know, go to the radio and stop listening at classical music, which was nothing in the house that identified it with that, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But she was very intrigued, and when I became 4 years old, she went to a private conservatory and talked to the teacher there and told them, you know, about what she noticed. And the teachers didn't want to take me because I didn't know how to read and write. I was starting kindergarten.
So what happened?
But my grandmother was very persistent and convinced the teachers to take me. And that's the beginning of the story.
Well, that's wonderful. So at 4 years old, this is in Cuba.
Yes.
You were of a kind of special person with a special grandmother with a determination that you obviously picked up from her. And then a different life flow happened.
Yes, it happened because, you know, I mean, it's like, you can imagine, I started coming home with all these different ideas and things that I was learning. I mean, solfège, which is something that you recite music, you know.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And the teachers actually talked to my grandmother, and they were concerned because how would I learn the theory,
mm-hmm.
you know? And my grandmother said, don't worry, she will. And she used to make me memorize the answers of the questions that were in the book, like it was poetry. I think that's one of the reasons why I have done so much with poets, because I love poetry. And at one point when I was a teenager, I wrote some poetry.
Yes.
So, so that's the beginning. And then when I was 5 years old, my grandfather bought me a real piano.
Well, your whole family is unusual in how quickly you managed.
Well, it was a family project.
Yes.
I became a family project, and I started coming home with all these things memorized. And of course, the piano that he bought was as cheap that these people had, you know, I mean. The payment for the piano was about eight pesos a month. And I saw what was going on home as I was growing up. So one of the things is that then my brother joined, I mean, also, and started learning the violin. And we started bringing all this classical music into the house, and we were actually living with our grandparents. And I would practice and practice and practice, and every time I made a mistake, since my grandmother would hear what they were playing at the conservatory, she would say, "You made a mistake." And that's how they started learning about Chopin and Tchaikovsky and Bach and everything, you know.
So when did the big break come? When you had to go out of the world?
Recital, I did my first recital when I was 5 years old. And I remember after I finished playing my piece, which I memorized, my grandmother came running with a bouquet of flowers to the stage. Of course she didn't go up. From the hall, she gave me these flowers. And that is something that I have never forgotten. And I was 5 years old, and I remember that moment. So, I started excel, as a pianist. And I won several competitions and things like that. And it was at nine, when I was about 9 years old, that my teacher went to Europe. He was a clavicembalist. He gave a recital in Paris, and he sent me a card, sending love to my mother and my grandmother. And he said he was bringing some books for me, And he sent me this card from the Eiffel Tower. And I don't know what happened to me, maybe because of the message in the back or maybe because of the picture in the front. But I started telling my family that I was going to be living in Paris. When I was growing up, I was going to live in Paris. They looked at me like I was crazy. Because it was obsessive. I started talking about that like it was going to happen.
Well, you had a good example in your grandmother. And your grandmother couldn't do anything except support you.
Well, you know what is interesting? One thing that is interesting is that life is very mysterious. At least for me, it has been a complete mystery. And the thing is that my grandmother, she didn't talk that much about all the things that I have been sort of like bumping into in life. You see?
Mm-hmm.
My grandmother is sort of like an Obama. Her mm-hmm. father was Spanish. Her mother was a descendant of Africanos,
mm-hmm.
But so she was very light. She was like Lena Horne or something like that,
Mm-hmm.
But she would never talk about things like that, But she talked to me about things that I started putting together. And that means that my grandmother, when I was becoming a musician, that I was serious about it, even that I never stopped going to school. And I'm a CPA because my family said, you better study something else just in case music doesn't give you sustenance, you see? Well, the thing is that she started talking to me about very important artists that she thought that have done remarkable well. And one of the artists that she talked to me about was Lena Horne. Marian Anderson. She talked to me about Marian Anderson. She talked to me about Josephine Baker. She talked to me about Paul Robeson. My grandmother used to, read a lot. And the name that I have is because she used to read the Russian masters, in terms of literature.
Mm-hmm.
That's why my name is Tanya, which is Russian. It was in one of the different novels that she read. And what? She's the one that told my parents, if it is a girl, I'm going to name her. So you name her. You name the boy. But if it is a girl, her name is going to be Tanya. And that's why I have this name.
So you are a fashioned child.
I don't know.
But what makes...
The thing is that I regret, everything that life teaches you and the experiences that you go through, because, I mean, she never saw this. My grandmother died when I was 4 years in the United States. And, you know, the tensions between my country of origin, the country that had adopted me, were so severe. Those like me that left, I left Cuba thinking I was going to go to France to make my dream and to go to the French Conservatoire and become a concert pianist. Because I always thought, you know, I used to watch the adventures of Flash Gordon, because I think, you know, that there's more than us in the universe. And I love all the out-of-space stuff, you know. It's like watching the eclipse last week. So I was so emotional about it, you know. It's like the realization that, yeah, we had to look at this. We're a planet. And it doesn't make sense that we're killing each other over here. So that's, you know, because, I mean, we're the human race. One more, you know. But anyway.
Let's talk about you and your music again, because at this point, I'm just willing to let you talk and talk and talk and talk.
I know. Well, you know, I'm giving you a little bit of perspective of where I come from.
Yes.
Why do I think the way that I think?
And I can see that. And that is what I thought had to have happened, that you had magical people in your background and family, and magic happened. And I'm just now getting into more appropriate in terms of asking you, first of all, with this project that we started talking about, and I got off it because I wanted to find out more about your background, now I can understand what you must have brought into this request from somebody at UCA. Was it your suggestion that you write an opera? Have you written operas before?
Yes, I wrote another opera with in collaboration with Wole Soyinka, which was the first Nobel Prize in Africa. And that opera was premiered in Europe. And it did really well, you know, and we went around and we did many, many performances in five different countries. And I never thought that I was going to be writing operas in my life, but, you know, it happened. Mm-hmm. And now I'm involved with another one. And seeing all these kids at this time, you know, going through all of that, it brought me back to stories that I really didn't know. I told you, my mother never went to school. And so, I mean, one of those kids or the women in that incident made me think of my mother. The men made me think of my father, my grandparents, you know. I mean, all that ancestry that my brother and I, we talked about, because we don't know where did they come from. So in other words, that's another thing that is very interesting in my life, is that the traces of migration, you know, coming from my ancestors. For one circumstance or the other, they end up in that island.
So let's get back to the opera, because you mentioned poetry and yes. How much you loved words. Yes. And I was looking at the information that was given me apropos the opera yes. That you're working on here, and the librettist. Have you worked with him before?
Well, there's two aspects, you know. Henry Louis Gates has become now the historian and the research historian behind the opera because of the amount of work that he has. I don't know if you also follow the work that he does for PBS, which is all over the world. And on top of that, he's doing some series that actually puts him in Africa almost every month.
Mm-hmm.
So therefore, the person that is creating the libretto is Tulani Davis. And Tulani have done librettos for operas before, including she did the libretto for an opera of Malcolm X.
Your librettist is a she?
Yes, it's a she.
Ah. It's difficult sometimes to know exactly these things.
No, no problem. You can actually verify all of this with mm-hmm. Gail.
But what I'm more concerned about is the words. Did you wait until she had got the librettist or the libretto for you?
Librettist, you know, create the libretto. Of course, there's talks and discussions and exchange of ideas and things like that. But the librettist create the text.
Yes, and with you already in love with poetry, there is always so much poetry in the words when people are using it for a special purpose that you have to feel that what you're going to set those words to have to relate to each other in a way so that you feel comfortable and each enhances what the other is giving to this composite work.
Exactly. And the thing is that also imagery, meaning that when I read the words, not only the words, I have to put myself in the shoes and become that person, you know, that the words are coming from. Because the same way that she created the words for this specific character, she had to think of the character. She had to think, not only think, read about it, I mean, see the character, perhaps, you know, in a film, make an idea of her idea. You know, we are all different. So, I mean, maybe my idea of Elizabeth Eckert is not Elizabeth, but is what Elizabeth elicited in me, you see?
Yes.
So the music that I create is my music, is the music in response to the words, and it's response about thinking of her, and it's response about seeing her body language, and it's response about meeting her, because I met her when I was in Little Rock. I met her now as a woman, you know, with a lot of wisdom. But, you know, I mean, this is the same one that I see in the clips.
Now, did you have time to talk together in a way that enhanced what you were going to be doing with the opera?
Well, I mean, we were part of a meeting, you know, when I went to Central. I mean, to Little Rock, because, I mean, the meeting was Little Rock. And then, you know, we had a chance to exchange some conversation, one with each other. But as I was talking to her, I was having in the back of my mind all of this that this woman have gone through at that time of her life and how that probably marked the who she is nowadays and how she expressed herself. Because, I mean, all these things create an impression on a person.
Yes, and the sound of her voice. And that would be part of what you would be thinking of when you were setting it to music.
Exactly. As I mentioned, it's not only her voice, but I mean, you know, her physical beingness, her, you know, she was very open and very, you know, we related to each other in a very, very warm way. No in between, you see. We were able to immediately connect. And that might be, you know, based on all of this background that I mentioned to you. I mean, I connect with everybody, not because of what they have or because what their position is because there's something. I mean, there's something that we could connect with each other if we wanted to.
Well, a few minutes ago we were talking about the words and that how important they were when you reacted to them. What about the instrumentation that you're working on?
Well, the instrumentation is based on many, many factors. You know, I mean, it's an instrumentation that perhaps will be good for opera companies, you know, to embark on when hiring the instrumentalists, because I'm not putting in the instrumentation anything foreign that is not indicative of orchestrations nowadays. And then, you know, in the instrumentation also, I'm trying to create a sonic palette that would support what I'm trying to say, musically speaking. You know? So that At least that is my focus at this point. We can actually think very big when putting in, an idea together. Later on, when it's going to be produced, that's where many, many things shift based on what is the budget.
mundane things that have to be taken into consideration.
We don't have any prince, or we're not in a palace like they described many, many, many centuries ago, you know, with somebody that became a, you know, the sole producer of the whole thing, because, you know, that was the way it was.
Well, I think it's like a juggler.
Yes, I know.
Just so long as the ideas that you have, that you put to one side, are still floating to be picked up again and maybe put in where you hadn't thought in the first place.
Yes, absolutely.
Well, all I can say is you must be a magician, and you're obviously being watched over by your grandmother.
Well, do you know something? Going back to being terrestrial, you know, from this planet, we all are magic, because everything that's around us was created by somebody's imagination. So why not to think that we can actually make this a big thing, and it will transform and adapt itself at every turn based on whatever we have to work with.
Yes, and I have a feeling that with all the things that you've done already and your approach to life in general and looking back and everywhere else, that there will never be a time when you'll do something and you know when you do it that it's wrong. The music and the words and the history that you're working with all together will bring in what you're trying to do and get through to the audiences that will be seeing this piece.
Yes. Do you know, I mean, one thing about the world of the arts and the world itself, you know, we get very hooked on have an expectation of something that we have already heard or already seen or already anything, you see. Sometimes when the artists come and come up with something different, at first somebody has a reaction, oh my God, what is that, you know? And the interesting thing is that time is the one that actually plays that artist or that work in a specific canon.
That was composer-conductor Tania Leon. She and Dr. Henry Louis Gates will be on stage tomorrow, September 25th, along with UCA journalist Dr. Lamkin Stevens, hear a preview of an opera aria, and audience Q&A, 7:30 p.m. in UCA's Reynolds Performance Hall. And that concludes the program for this week. Please join us next weekend at the same time. I'm Ann Nicholson. Thank you for listening.
The Art Scene is a presentation of UA Little Rock Public Radio.